It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right, we are recording things. A podcast, presumably.
Yep. Presumably.
I'm back in the room with terrible lighting. And I also have given up on the headphone. Because in this room, Trish is way back in the house, so she can't hear anyway. So your voice can't annoy the crap out of her. Like she always says. You like my haircut? I got my haircut just yesterday.
Oh. I didn't notice.
I know, because I decided to keep a lot of the length, because I like this, like, lion's mane thing it has going for me. It's also layered a lot, so it's a lot lighter, which I am very happy about.
Okay.
I'm super unprepared for this podcast. Hello, everyone!
You prepared for the podcast? How do you
have no idea how much of this shit I work out beforehand in my head, and I've done none of that. So.
Okay.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the other day. I was trying to point at my wife. We were lying in bed, and I tried to point at her with both hands, and I kind of did it like this, and she's like, did you just dab at me? And I'm like, I think I did. I didn't do it on purpose, though.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Fucking Podcast. The only podcast in the world that takes 3 takes to get its intro in and refuses to edit the other 2 out.
Yep.
I'm Tony, and also this is Ezzy.
And I'm William, and this is episode 487.
Ezzy's pissed because my computer is right where she's decided is her new favorite spot in the world. She was hanging out there all day.
Where's that?
Right here, right where the computer is.
I mean, is it a table or a cushion?
No, it's a cushion on the couch. Let's stick with the parts that I know. If you're just joining us the first time, I mean, I'd like to say the energy level is higher than this, but not by a lot normally. So
no,
that's how the show works. We have a hat. Is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people, cool people, wonderful, helpful people who still keep doing what they're doing, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards that have the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. It's completely unprepared servants, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored. That's the talking part of the till we're bored. Do that for about an hour. That's the show, except the parts that aren't, which is honestly almost all of it.
Almost.
So, how's your week been?
It's been all right. I just noticed I have a Norton Critical Edition of Classic Fairy Tales. I think I've read some of this, but I wonder if Jazz gave me this.
You have a what?
A Norton Critical Edition of Classic Fairy Tales. She was just telling me about how she's getting a Norton Critical Edition of the first edition of Frankenstein. I'm pretty sure I've read some of these, but I think Jazz might have given me this book. Anyway.
So if you say Norton Critical Edition to me,
Yeah.
I assume this is some sort of antivirus software.
No, it's a Norton Critical Edition is it's like for Frankenstein, it probably has the text in there, and then it probably has a section of a whole bunch of people talking about it.
Mostly Ed Norton.
Well, I mean different people.
Definitely Ed Norton is part of it.
But this has, what's great about this, it doesn't seem like I've read them all, but maybe I have, is it gives different versions of the fairy tales, right? So there's a whole section with Little Red Riding Hood.
And oh, God, so, Little Red Riding Hood has some really freaky versions.
And a whole section for Beauty and the Beast and so on. So anyway, my wife and I finished watching Warrior Nun before we talked last time, or?
No, you're not finished.
Have you watched it?
Nun with the nun.
Have you watched it?
No. In fact, I've decided I am not planning on it. Unless my wife comes back and tells me it's freaking amazing or something.
Oh.
So how are your feelings about it?
Well, we liked it. If I were to guess whether or not Trish would come back and say it was freaking amazing, I would guess that it wouldn't get that high of praise, but I don't know. She might, maybe she'll think
it's freaking. The crap that she's made me watch because she thought it was amazing is pretty bad. Like, off the top of my head, the only two things I can think of are season one of Umbrella Academy and season one of the fucking 100.
Oh, 100, yeah.
So, well, she's a little crazy.
I don't know. I seems like you might like it, but I don't know. I have a feeling,
I suspect I would. It just, nothing about it says I would like it well enough for it to, like, jump the queue of the infinite number of other things I want to watch.
Yeah. I don't know a whole lot about the source material, but what I do know, I cannot imagine someone who's a huge fan of the source material, I can't imagine they'd like this.
Which is not uncommon.
Yeah, but I mean, they really deviated from the source material quite a bit, which is, it's still fine, but I would think if, or, I mean, we liked it all right, but if I would think if you really like the source material and certain aspects of it especially, I don't see how you could possibly like this, which is weird because it's almost like they didn't even care about fans of the source material when they made it. It's
which,
like,
why often would you happens.
That seems kind
of depends on how much the source material folks are involved. Sometimes you just sell the license rights and then you go away.
I guess. I mean, in some ways they respected the source material. I won't get into what I mean by that, but in some ways they didn't really touch the source material, but they did change some things about the lore, say, that seemed pretty important to me. Like, if you like the source material, that you wouldn't like what they changed, it seems to me.
Prison Files did a lot of that.
I guess I can be more specific. When I say there were some aspects of it that they didn't touch, what I mean is, if there are certain characters that you really like, they don't have these characters in the thing. So it's not like they're ruining your characters, but they also don't have your character in it. So
yeah,
I don't know if that's going to be a blessing or a curse.
No, that's kind of what made me think of Dresden Files, because by the end of that season, there's a character that is his love interest. And that character is an absolute arch villain for the beginning of the series and dies fairly early on.
Well, in this case, it seems like most of the events of the show take place after events that are in the comic. So by excluding the character you like, they're not replacing them or really excluding them. It's like, oh, that person did these things in the past. And so,
I see.
You know, all the stuff you might have liked about the character is preserved, kind of. But still, you probably would rather see the thing with your character, first of all. And second of all, as I said, they did change some of the lore in a way that I thought was significant, that, you know, it would be equivalent to say, like, let's say you told a Batman story and he became Batman, but his parents were never killed at all. I mean,
I would love that.
Well, a lot of people might, but other people would think, wait, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, the whole thing about him becoming Batman was because his parents were dead. So some people wouldn't like that. I honestly wouldn't care about that kind of thing, but a lot of other people would probably not like that. You know, like a big change, something that really makes it very different to fans anyway, to casual people watching, probably not a big deal.
Spoilers, you people, Thomas and Martha Wayne are still alive in Warrior Nun.
But I mean, as I was watching it and thinking about whether or not you would like it, I mean, it's got all that thematic stuff that you usually like, and it's like, he'd probably like this, but I don't know.
I do like thematic stuff.
You know what I mean, like demons and angels and religious trappings of whatever.
Today I watched the first episode of Lock and Key.
Yeah, I think we watched just one episode of that. Didn't really.
It's good enough. I'm going to watch the rest, I think. And we went pretty quick. Like, I anticipate. Okay. Any story, the young adult story, where it's like, oh, there's these young people and they go somewhere, but things are not all as it seems and it's secretly evil. Like, you know, we have to have the start where they're just shitty teenagers and or little children who nobody believes.
Yeah.
I feel like we've pretty much front loaded all. I feel like by the next episode, most of that will be gone. And I'm very happy about that. Cause that was annoying as fuck. We moved pretty quickly forward into, like, here's some undeniable fucked up shit going on. So
yeah,
we'll see. There's only 10 episodes. Let's see what happens. I don't know why. I just had this urge. Really, I should be watching the last season of Killjoys because I haven't done that yet, and I want to do that. But I just had to, because I finished what I was watching, which was the D&D campaign, the Unsleeping City campaign. I finally finished that.
Mm.
Now I can move on to watching an actual TV show. Really enjoyed the end of Unsleeping City. That was very, very good.
Good.
I talked about Legendary last week, the reality show with the ballroom crews.
Mm, yeah.
We're still watching that. We're still really enjoying that. Last one we watched had a guest judge that is a major character on Pose, so that was fun.
Oh.
It's really fun because the character on Pose is an absolute bitch, and this judge appears to be an absolute bitch. She, like, fought with other judges and kept getting up out of her seat, and they told her she had to go back. And yeah. But yeah, so we're having fun with that. What else are we watching? We're not watching a lot lately. We watched a couple of movies that we had been planning on that came out. We watched Old Guard. Have you watched Old Guard yet?
Yeah, we saw Old Guard. I forgot about that.
What was your feeling?
I mean, it seemed like a story that we've seen before kind of thing. But that said, it was entertaining. I mean, if they make more, we'll watch them.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah,
and that's pretty much what I'll say. Like, it's not mind-blowing. It is fun. It's a good action movie with some good acting in it and good character. Like, you want to watch some people kicking ass and stuff, it's fun. You want to see Charlize Theron with a legit Labrys kicking the shit out of people. It's good.
Yeah.
I felt they were still a little too twitchy in their fight editing, especially because it's her. And she doesn't need stunt doubles most of the time.
Mm.
And that's the excuse why you do the cuts in most modern action movies do, and I hate it.
Yeah.
They weren't as bad as most, but I would have liked better. They were still a little jumping around. They totally set it up for a sequel. We'll see what happens. But yeah, it was fun. I mean, if you don't see it, your life will be exactly the same. But you want to watch a cool action movie some afternoon or whatever, it's good.
The cast is very good. I mean, it's...
Yes. Everybody did a great job.
I don't see how you'd be like you said, if you don't watch it, your life will be the same. But I don't think you're going to regret watching it just to see some of these really good performances, because they're pretty good.
It's real nice. But I mean, it's just a straight up action movie, but it's a good one.
Yeah.
And then we watched Palm Springs on Hulu.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Kind of worked for a while. It's okay. Let me see what I can say. I'm trying not to give away anything that's not like obvious in the trailer. It's a movie about two people attending a wedding in Palm Springs, and something weird happens. It's a man and a woman, and the woman realizes she's waking up and it's the same day that it was. And she goes to talk to the man, and it turns out the man's been reliving the same day, a la Groundhog Day, for ages. And now she's also stuck in this time loop.
Mm.
And hijinks ensue. And it becomes, it's a comedy. It's 100%. I mean, it's Adam Sandberg. Mm. And Lonely Island people got credit for it. Like, it's definitely a comedy. It's kind of a romantic comedy. Yeah, it's basically a romantic comedy set in one of those infinite time loop ropes. And it's also fun. It gives good credit for me because it's fairly original in the way it's done.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a story that I've seen before. The two leads have very good chemistry. Andy Samberg's character kind of sucks in a very mundane way that I don't enjoy, and that was a problem.
Yeah.
But in general, I think it's, I mean, again, you can skip it and you'll be fine, but it's fun and it's original. It's an original take on these, both the romantic comedy trope and the sci-fi infinite time loop trope. So it's fun. It's like an hour and a half on Hulu. So I would recommend that, I suppose. Still playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Playing it very slow, just enjoying myself. Getting a lot of work done in the house. Really, really digging this homemaking thing. It's satisfying for me. And it's working good for Trish, too. Earlier tonight, she talked about how she did not realize how awesome it would be to have somebody else handling dinner every night. Not only just making it, but like she doesn't have to think about it or figure out what it's going to be or anything. You expected that to be cool, but like that's the thing. I don't know. Have we discussed, or are you familiar with the concept of mental load?
Sure, yeah.
For those of you listening who aren't as familiar, it's when people talk about the division of labor in a household and how frequently, even if both people are working frequently, the woman has to do more of the labor and all that. But there's also a category called mental load, which is that the woman is usually the one who has to keep track of things in her head. And in illustrations, it's always that situation, which I've done plenty, where there's something going on and I'm like, just tell me, I can help. What do you want? Like, tell me what to do. It's just easier not to, but I don't take the initiative to figure out what the problem is or anything. I'm like, I'm here to help. Say the word and I'll help. But without taking responsibility for it. And me now working in the home, and taking over the homemaking duties and stuff, a lot of that mental load is going to shift.
Hmm.
And this is one of the early versions is I figure out what's for dinner. Sometimes I come to her and I'm like, okay, here's my two options I can make tonight. Which do you want? Or sometimes I'm like, I was going to make this. How's that sound? And if she says, I don't care, that's fine. I'll figure it out. And apparently she really likes that. Slowly excavating the kitchen, more and more space is usable.
Mm.
Laundry is getting done crazy on time. Trish is like, this clean laundry every day thing, it's freaking me out. Quickly figuring out, like, we do not have enough place for all of our dishes or all of our clothes, and we just never knew because they weren't all clean.
So, yeah.
Figuring that out. Oh yeah, I'm enjoying that business too. I yet another friend come out to me as transgender.
Another?
I had a friend a few months ago come out to me as transgender. And now another one come out to me as transgender. And in both cases, absolutely did not see it coming. And these are close friends.
Really?
Yeah. It was very surprising. This one's really picking it up and running with it more than the first one. Like, seeing therapists, making appointments to start HRT, all that kind of stuff. Like, really going. So I'm psyched for them. That's pretty cool. Yeah, very surprising.
Is it? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think of how many people. I mean, if I count you.
Which you probably shouldn't these days, but yeah.
Okay.
I'm sliding towards maybe identifying as non-binary. Right, honestly, right. My gender expression nowadays is that whatever the fuck, I do what I want. It's not your problem.
I mean, I know a lot of people who would probably care. Oh, I say a lot. I mean, probably more than my share, I guess, of people who would identify as non-binary, for sure. As far as trans, I know personally just one person. I think just one.
I know a trans man. Well, I don't know. They were transitioning as a trans man. I mean, they were taking testosterone and all that. Think they might be sliding back to a non-binary because they switched from female pronouns to male pronouns and now are using they, them, there.
Oh, okay.
And that one also surprised me, but that's a person I didn't know nearly as well. So, and then, yeah, now I know people who explicitly consider themselves male to female transsexuals, one of which is not doing anything and one of which is just now starting the process, both of whom are in their 40s. And I have noticed from my history with people of this sort, history with transgender people, a lot of male-bodied individuals who feel they are more female kind of keep it to themselves until their 40s when they're, like, established in their relationships and established in their careers and stuff, and then start sort of going down that road very slowly and deliberately. My big transgender mentor, I always refer to her, in college for me, was a professor who had decided just about a year before to start doing that. And it started very sort of small and went through the process. And it stopped before, I don't know what we call it now. We used to call it gender reassignment surgery. Now it's like gender verification, I don't know, something. She still has a penis is what I'm getting at. In fact, she told me, she's like, I've been married for 25 years, a lovely woman. We have an active sex life. It involves my penis. Just because I'm a woman now, I don't want to get rid of that. and she's lived very happily as a woman now for, I guess, like 20 years or so. And she had talked about it, yeah, that it really started to come up at a certain age and all that, and I've seen a lot of that, specifically trans women. I can't speak to trans. The only trans man I know is quite young. Yeah, I found that interesting, which I guess means it's my time, but I'm at the point where I'm like, nope. Yeah, I actually, with listening to people going through this, has more and more convinced me that I'm not in that same camp, because while my issues tend to be sort of aspirational, a lot of people talk about this like feeling wrong and their body feels like it doesn't match them, and when they consider the possibility of fully transitioning, a little voice in their head that's been quiet all this time is suddenly very loud and insistent. And it's a very desperate thing. And I'm like, no, I've never really had that. No, I don't really know what I am, but like I said, I'm too old to give a shit. I'm going to express gender however I want and y'all can deal.
Well, I
just realized since I'm not working, I should probably start painting my nails again. I used to love that.
I've never really felt like I belong to the society of males. I just do not fit into that group. Like, you know, like I'm introverted, you know, and it's, there have been a lot of times where someone would say, oh, well, there's going to be other guys there or whatever. It's like, that means nothing to me.
Oh, no. Yeah,
it means nothing to me. I'm not going to care about that. Now, while I do, I have always very much enjoyed the company of women for I don't know why women more than men. I mean, I'm straight, but that's not it. I mean, I'm not like interested in all these women. I'm just interested in them in every other way. Like, I'm interested to know what they think. I'm interested to know what their experiences are. I don't have to care about dating them or anything. I'm more interested in them as people than I am in men. For some reason, I don't know.
I always tended to have female friends more than male friends my whole life. Still do.
Yeah, me too.
Which is funny because my mother historically had male friends more than female friends. And it was really funny to listen to us talk to each other about it. I'm like, why would you want to hang out with male friends? They're all just so like dumb and big-headed and all this. She's like, why would you want to hang out with women? They're all so manipulative and backstabbing. And I was like,
"Huh." Well, I mean, my lack of interest in interacting with men wasn't ever because I had like a negative opinion of them. Being a male bodied person myself and in those situations and feeling perfectly comfortable in situations where there were men, I just wasn't interested. I wasn't uncomfortable. Like, I wasn't uncomfortable in a locker room full of guys. I wasn't uncomfortable being an athlete or whatever. But, you know, while I'm participating in these activities with other men, I'm just focused on the activity. I'm not interested in socializing, but I hear them socializing. I know what kinds of things they talk about, and I'm not interested in any of it. Now, I do have male friends like you and Chris and whatever, and you guys interest me as people, and I like to know what's going on with you, and I like to talk to you, but most of the men who I have relationships that I would consider like the friendships I've had with women, those men are not very manly, I guess, if I, you know.
I have very few relationships with men, and most of the ones I do are awkward in ways that are difficult to explain. You're an exception, but that's because I tend to think of you as trans species, so... haven't figured out what the actual species is, but it's clearly different.
I have, and I've said before that a lot of the female friends I've had, when we were in situations where they were talking about a boyfriend or someone, and then they would say something disparaging about men in general, they'd say this stuff, and then they'd look at me, and sometimes I would joke, hey, you know, what about me kind of thing, but usually I wouldn't say anything because I knew what they were talking about, and I didn't consider myself as part of the group they were talking about. But sometimes they would think they had to say something, and I've said this before, they always said the same thing, you're not a man or you're not a guy or whatever. They didn't say you're different guy or you're different. They would just flat out say that I was not male, flat out, which I always thought was interesting. But I don't think they ever would have said I was female either. And I've never thought of myself as female either. I just generally look at the gender binary and I think the whole thing is kind of ridiculous. I don't feel like I conform to either side, and I don't care that I don't. It's never bothered me that I don't. I think it's bothered other people. I think some other people have sometimes been put off by it. But I also pass because I wear t-shirt and jeans. You know, nobody's going to think I'm non-gender conforming if they look at me.
You always feel fairly male to me.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Not human, but whatever it is, male.
Well, and I am straight. I mean, there's not very much doubt about that. And when people interact with me, but I think the more a person gets to know, you know, you look at me I look like a gender conforming person. And if you interact with me, interact with me for a brief time. You know, I've got a wife. Okay, well, he seems like he's straight or whatever. But the more, if a lot of people, when they try to put me in a category based on those two things, how I look and the fact that I'm heterosexual, they immediately starts to go off the rails. They'll try to talk to me about things that they think men are generally interested in that I'm not, or they'll think that I have certain views that I don't have.
I think that says more about them than it does about your gender expression.
Maybe. But I do know, or at least
you always seem male to me, but if you want to do the stereotypical guy stuff, no, you're nothing like that. Yeah. You always come off as very masculine to me.
Really?
Yeah.
I think you're the first person to ever say that to me. Really, I don't think anyone has ever thought that I come off as masculine.
At least as much as I do.
Well, yeah, that might be true, actually, now that you mention it. But I would never say you come off as masculine. You come off as Tony. That's not masculine, really. Or feminine, I should say. It's not just... you to me are a very gender nonconforming person. Jazz is another person like that, where it's like, this person is not fitting into these boxes, and that's
cool. I often interpret gender as sort of collection of behaviors and perspectives that I associate with being raised that gender in this society, and it's not tied to stereotypical interests or things like that. It's just sort of the way you carry yourself as a person. And I feel that I'm riddled with that stuff. So much about me is very evident that I was raised male. So much of the things I'm interested in are not things that are commonly associated with men. But just sort of the way I am is very indicative, my view, of having been raised male, and you also.
Okay.
Also, no girls like that, man. What are you talking about?
Yeah, you're probably the first person I've ever met to suggest that I'm...
That's because I'm the smartest person you know.
There is one person one time that I knew. This was the only time anyone ever said this to me. That's why I'm bringing it up, because I remember this. So this person, I don't know how we got on the topic of it, but somehow we started interacting about physical fitness and self-defense kind of topics. And I'd never really been trained in self-defense, but somehow while we were talking about this stuff, we start talking about different ways to get out of holds and stuff like that, which I happen to know somehow. I don't remember exactly how the conversation went, because that's not the point, because I'd totally forgotten we actually had a conversation about these things until she said something later. But anyway, we had this interaction about breaking holds and getting out of situations and stuff like that. A conversation I completely forgot about, because I don't think of myself as having any expertise in this. But later, that's the main thing, was later when something came up where she had to go somewhere and she didn't feel entirely safe, and she wanted me to go with her because she would feel safe if I went with her.
Ah.
And no one had ever said that to me before. Like, I don't think it, I'm not even... I guess I don't want to speculate on that score, but I, you know, I've known a lot of people, you know, a lot of women who I were friends with, and I would never have been the first person they would have picked to go into a dangerous situation and, you know, so they could feel safe or whatever.
I frequently am, and it's entirely performative, because everybody who knows me knows I don't know how to fight, don't want to fight, don't anything, but a good deterrent just based on how I look.
Yeah, I think you've mentioned that before.
Well, yeah, I think I specifically talked about when I used to do security for pagan events with me and this woman, and I was the one to look scary, and she was the one who actually had a black belt in Taekwondo.
Right, but I am tall, I guess, but I don't, I've never had a threatening, I mean, never. I was skinny, kind, you know, I just don't think
at,
I look
at Applied Systems. You used to threaten to cut me on a daily basis.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
I don't know what you used.
No, I didn't do that.
Calling everybody bitch, and it was crazy.
No, come on. But yeah, so I mean, but the reason she felt like she'd be safe is because she thought I would know how to deal with certain situations, which maybe I would. I don't know.
What I'm just hearing from all these stories is most people don't know you very well.
That's probably true. That's probably true. I mean, when I was growing up, people would basically tell me all about themselves, and I would not tell them anything about myself, and not because I was hiding it, but because they never asked. I mean, you know, they didn't seem particularly interested. They were totally interested. I mean, they were totally willing to answer my questions, of which I had many, but they didn't ask me any questions, so I didn't tell them anything. So yeah, a lot of people when I was growing up probably didn't know very much about me.
I noticed back when I had a job, and that job was in a building and not over a computer, that people would say, like, how are you doing, or how's the day going, or whatever to me. I would totally tell them, whether I was being frank or making a joke or so. I would definitely have things to say, like, well, I'd just tell them, like, oh, well, this is fucked up, or whatever. And I very seldom reciprocated the question.
Oh, you didn't ask them back?
No. I thought about that. And what it largely came down to was, I mean, in general, people ask that not expecting a real answer.
Yeah, that's right.
You're supposed to say fine, or yeah, not too bad, or whatever. Decided my responses were entertaining. Even the non-comedic ones were entertaining. What it ultimately came down to is I did not give a shit how their day was going. If I did, if there was somebody who looked like what's happened, why do you look so sad or angry or high, you know? Or if I genuinely wanted to check with somebody on something, I would do that. But like people I'm passing in the hall, I do not give a shit. And I'm like, they asked, so I'm going to answer. And if they don't like that, then they'll learn not to ask. But I'm not going to pretend I'm interested. And I think this is a horrible thing. But I haven't figured out how, if at all, I'm going to deal with it. I have been working for a long time on more listening when people have shit say. And if there is some sort of group situation, if I'm with somebody and like we're working on a project or whatever, and they're just asking me things and I'm answering a bunch, I will notice, or I hopefully will know, but I mean, if I notice, I will attempt to be like, okay, what's your take on this? I will attempt to even things out. But in the friendly salutation level of things, don't give a shit. So, I don't know what that means.
Well, I mean, in my life, there's been a lot of, I'm totally interested in whatever that person has to say, totally. And so for a long time, I didn't say anything. Then I went through a period where I realized that some people probably didn't feel comfortable with that, and they would have liked, you know, that I'm not just collecting all this information, but that I might share something. And that was difficult because sometimes people did want that and like that, and sometimes they didn't. And I didn't know the difference. So, and then later in life, I went through a period where I was actually really frustrated with things, and I found I did kind of want to get things off my chest, and someone would be talking to me, and then I would notice that I was talking to them, like just unburdening myself without realizing that I was doing that, not realizing I needed to do that, not realizing I wanted to do that. And that was weird. I didn't really like that very much. And then there's this podcast, and it's like, I don't know. I still struggle to this day to know when I should say something, when I shouldn't. I mean, I shouldn't not talk, obviously, but then I talk too much, and I don't know.
I feel like with this podcast, the real answer, and it's a very simple thing, always do the opposite of what you think you should do.
No, that doesn't work.
I feel, I don't know, have you given it a real effort in the podcast? I mean, I feel like pick the stuff that you think you shouldn't talk about and just go off. And then the stuff that you think is interesting or you want to talk about, just do.
Right.
That's how we get stories about funnel cakes and people dying in Jim McGregor chairs.
No, I don't. That's true. Those are things that I look back and as entertaining as those were to you in particular, and also some of our listeners.
And the listeners.
It wasn't that. I wasn't very comfortable for me to talk about. For sure. I don't know. Either one of those things.
My brother and I have some tension in our relationship that has gone on for years, and it's hard to identify entirely. It seems to be wholly on my side. But the closest I've come is that my brother doesn't talk a lot about himself. He's very interested in me and other people and asks a lot of questions. My father asks a lot of questions. Or did ask a lot of questions as well. He also would share more about himself. My brother doesn't seem to. And I find that off-putting.
Yeah, that's right. That's why I think a lot of
people... I don't know if
do.
It's a socially off-putting or if it's a... I have a harder time understanding the person he is because of that.
Well, the reason I tried to start sharing more of myself with people was because I felt like some people were thinking it, that they started to be suspicious of my motives if I was asking a whole bunch of questions. Like, they couldn't just think I was interested in them, which was true.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, that's been part of my personality for as long as I can remember. I'm interested in human beings as a whole group. I'm interested in individual human beings. I'm interested in human groups. I mean, I can strike up a conversation with anybody because I am truly 100% interested, but some people, they don't believe that or they're suspicious of that. So if I'm not also sharing, you know, aspects of myself, they get very suspicious and they feel uncomfortable.
There is a component of that because it's not the norm. The norm is give and take a little bit, or there's a fair number of people who just want to talk about themselves. So there's a suspicion that you're up to something. But also there's the component that if you're only asking questions and not talking about yourself, people know you're very inquisitive and interested, and that's literally all they know about you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't really like talking about myself or any particular subject. That might surprise people listening because a lot of people probably think I really like to hear myself talk.
I know, pretty much everything on this podcast I've forced you to do. So
the truth is I started out being a very quiet person, and then I moved up to being a little more outgoing because I felt like that was the right thing to do. And I've kind of not been able, even my whole life since then, it's been a struggle to know when to talk, when not to talk. And oftentimes I talk way too much or not enough. I'm pretty much never satisfied with whatever it is.
I struggle with the same thing. I just care about it a lot less than you do. No, I constantly am like, I talked too much, didn't I? I took that thing over. Oh, crap. I really left out some stuff that would have been useful. Oh, I should have. I was too quiet. Oh, no, now I just ran over everybody. Like, that's always in my head.
Yeah, me too.
I'm just mostly like, next time.
Well, but the thing for me is, again, and some people who've known me only in the last 20 years or so might be surprised by this, but the fact is I'm not interested in speaking unless I have a reason to. So I'm
not
constantly
interested in anything unless you have a reason to.
Right. And so I'm constantly evaluating how much I've talked, what I've said, and all that stuff. All the stuff you said about talking over people and all that, I think about that too, but it's also in the larger context of what was I trying to achieve? What did I achieve? And so that I have that extra burden, and I don't think you think about that. I think
no. Well, me, I have the urge to say something. It's a perfectly valid reason.
Yeah.
And whether it's an urge because I think it's funny, or an urge because it's something I want to express, or an urge because I think it makes me look a certain way, or an urge because I think it'll have some effect that I want, or an urge because I think it's just useful information and everybody should have it, whether they think so or not. That all to me is a valid reason to speak.
Yeah, almost none of those are a valid reason for me. Nope. There's always some bigger mission or whatever, purpose. And if that's not served, then I should just have kept my mouth shut, basically. So.
That's horrifying to me.
Well, that's the way I've always been my whole life. And I'm fine with it, except when I mess up, of course, I'm not very kind to myself. But that's, to me, that's not about the fact that I have some kind of a mission or you know, I try to, or I perceive some larger meaning to things. I should be more forgiving toward myself in any case. It's me being mean to myself.
That's the problem. Absolutely true. You should be more forgiving to yourself in pretty much absolutely every aspect of your life.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think there's a problem with me not wanting to speak unless I have a reason to speak. I think the problem is if I feel like I speak and it didn't serve a reason, that I give myself a lot of grief for it. That's the problem.
But again, this comes to what you define as a reason. Because I would agree that I don't want to speak unless I have a reason to. Okay, I got a lot more reasons than you.
Granted. But as I say, I think the real issue is I just need to not be so hard on myself. And then everything else will be just fine. It's not.
I think that's true in pretty much every aspect of your life.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I guess
that's you and one other friend of mine, I feel like that's the key to both your happinesses, is if you would just lighten up on yourselves.
Well, I don't even know where that comes from in me, actually, because I mean, my parents both have struggled with depression and things, but I don't remember thinking that they were either particularly hard on themselves or had, you know, anything like a low self-esteem or anything like that. I'm not sure where it comes from. And they weren't hard on me at all.
Sometimes it's just neurochemical.
Yeah.
In your case, I think it's the weight of the collective unconscious, because there are literally billions of people who have never met you but intrinsically don't like you. And I feel you just are feeling that psychically at all times.
Oh, I'm not concerned about people not liking me. I think I'm concerned about like needless suffering out in the world, you know, and feeling like I'm either helping relieve some of that or I'm contributing to more of it.
And you're contributing is just this thing in the back of their brains just all the time.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if it turned out you were the reason for a significant chunk of cancer in the world. It's like, well, resonant somehow.
I mean, obviously, the vast majority of things I do have no impact on the world at all, positive or negative. I shouldn't, you know, think in those, you know, and I don't really think in those black and white terms, but I do, I am concerned about either making things better or, you know, beating myself up for thinking I made things worse. And I'm not so much concerned about anybody liking me or even like, you know, if at the end of my life, I could somehow know that I had a positive impact on the world, but nobody knew it, I wouldn't care. That's fine with me. I don't need anyone to know that I had a positive impact. I just need to know. And so, you know, that occupies a lot of my thinking, is what am I doing to make the world better? Or, you know, how can I make up for something I did that just made the world worse? Those thoughts are on my mind a lot, most of the time, pretty much all the time.
This is exhausting. I'm going to draw something out of the hat. This is from Beth, who I was just talking to on the blog today. The blog's a wonderful place, people. MagicalTalkingHat.com. It's where you can comment on the things we've said here. Because as much as we say on here, we often have not exhausted the topics. There's more to be said.
Usually.
Frequently, it falls out of the category of shit neither of us know.
Yeah.
That pertains to what we're talking about. And so you can go there and you can school us in it or give your take on it or just watch William and Jazz play tennis. The neat thing is generally we respond to stuff, so that's fun.
Yep.
All right. Beth asks, what new COVID-19 related habits are you hoping to maintain once life returns to normal? I feel like we've had a similar question to this, but not this. Another one about like how the impact of COVID will impact our life post-COVID, sort of.
I mean, it seems like for me, you know, it's always discovering ways that my normal life already I was already doing a lot of this stuff, or it doesn't affect me, or it actually like I like having my wife home. As an introvert, sometimes I like having an excuse not to go somewhere, you know? So I can't think of anything most, you know, and then I went home and I felt bad that I wasn't more cognizant of social distancing, but realized we did social distance because that's what we do. I mean, there's just not a lot of stuff that's so different from what I was doing before, partly because I'm introverted, partly because I'm a germaphobe, partly because of how I was raised, I guess. I didn't realize that so much until our conversation last week. So, I mean, our household, we might continue ordering our groceries online, for example, if we can keep doing that. I can see the household doing that.
I don't think that's going to change. They had that before COVID, so.
Yeah, and we did it sometimes, actually. The whole shopping online thing was something, we didn't do it for the first time because of COVID, but we didn't do it as often as we do now, obviously. So yeah, we might do that more often. I don't know. I think we're going to keep kind of doing this stuff that we've always done, but like I said, we were doing most of it before the pandemic anyway. Now for you, things changed fairly dramatically, right?
Yes. Yes. It's interesting because we're definitely big homebodies in general, but this crossed a line in that. And I think it's made me realize if I'm going to spend so much time at home, which I do even without a pandemic, like I should make it the way I want it, you know?
Mm.
Because before, I guess I could just sort of leave periodically and then come home and I'm tired or whatever and I didn't really have to think about it or, you know, because I was at work or I was at a friend's or whatever. It's also why I liked to go out to eat so much because we can sit at a table across from each other that's not doable in the house. And yeah, I think this has sort of been making me realize because I'm enjoying my house more as I clean it and as things get more organized because we eventually had to sort of come up with routines. We were just here, and I'm enjoying that more, and I hope to take that with me afterward to make my home the way I want it, because I spend a lot of time there.
Yeah.
I think there's a component similar to it, to a sort of 9/11 thing. Like, I'm going to look at people and things and interactions and handshakes and doorknobs and crowds differently after this, because I've learned a lot more about infection vectors.
Oh, sure.
During this. And so not that it's going to make me more scared, but it's going to make me more aware. Maybe things like, you were hanging out outside. You were in a weird building and you shook a lot of hands and crap. Maybe wash your hands when you get home, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or if you're not feeling well, I mean, just the basic idea that I've loved. So the masks that we're all wearing.
Yeah.
Asia, they've been doing this for ages. When you're right. Sick, you put on a mask to protect the people around you. So they don't get it. You know, do that. That sounds nice. I mean, ideally stay at home, but if you can't and people frequently can't or won't, that. Yeah, I think that's going to change some things, but no, I've been very pleased when you've had the same thing. A lot of people are going stir crazy being in their house with their family. And I know, I understand there's a whole new dimension when kids are involved. But I also know just couples that are like, I'm going to murder them now. Trish and I loved it.
Yeah. It's
been great.
Yep. We've liked it a lot.
We're pretty good about having our separate time if we want it and all that. So that's another thing, but it's been great. I wanted to go back to the office because I want to test how I operate when I'm by myself.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit. I want to see how that works. But for the most part, I love having her around. And I think she's thinking in the long term, she may end up doing a hybrid thing where she works from home some. That would be nice. Also, I think it's going to be fall before they even talk about it, really.
Oh, really? I don't know. I think my wife... Well, no, I think, yeah, September they're going to start talking about it, right? Because
They had said August, and then recently they sent out a thing, and they're like, August is when we're going to look at the options. And then
Yeah, I think September is what her office said. And I think before that, there was some indication that they might not do anything until the beginning of next year, but...
My brother-in-law, his work told him a while ago, straight up, nobody's coming back till January.
Well, we had a service guy in here a few weeks ago working on something. You know, he had his mask on and everything. We've had a couple service people here, and they've always been really good and, you know, social distancing and wearing masks and everything. But he said that his wife worked for Principal Financial, which, if people don't know, that's a Des Moines-based insurance company, but it's also financial. I think a lot of financial things they do. It's a really important business in Des Moines. It's got a really iconic building in downtown Des Moines, is the Principal Financial building. And the reason I bring all that up is because I was really surprised by what he told me. He said his wife, who worked in a branch office near here, they told her she was going to be work from home permanently.
Yeah, I think more and more of that is showing up because this experience has to go on for so long, and it's causing some companies to realize, oh shit, we don't need the overhead.
Well, sure, but I mean,
still function.
Right. And I knew this about businesses that rent, but I mean, Principal owns, in fact,
ACT owns their buildings too. So I don't
know. Yeah. And he said recently that they recently only just built the building that she was working in. So, but like you just pointed out, that's still overhead. You got to pay property taxes and utilities and all this other stuff. So yeah, they probably, even the people who own properties probably realized, wow, look how much cheaper this is. Why do we own all these properties and maintain all these properties? We can have people stay home there. I think maybe for some companies, their productivity actually went up instead of down.
Probably daily overhead expenses that decrease with fewer people there too.
That's probably true.
Potentially heat and costs or something like that. I just know that our ACT frequently would reorganize in such a way that like a particular building would have more people suddenly, and they would have to reconfigure all the cubicles and stuff like
yes,
that.
Yes, that's right. Right.
You don't got to do that anymore if some of your people are home. So.
That's right. So yeah, I mean, I think it's really, but if that happens, I mean, already you've got businesses that rent who might decide they don't want to rent anymore. So that's rental income that whoever owns that property is going to lose. But then who's going to want to buy these properties that, like, if Principal decides they don't want this property, who's going to buy it? If Principal doesn't want it, who is going to want it?
Yep.
So, I mean, that's going to be, and that's going to have an impact on the overall economy.
It's going to have a huge impact on real estate down the road. Not instantly,
Commercial real estate, including rented commercial real estate, that all has a fairly sizable impact on the economy, whatever that's doing. A lot of people don't realize it because they don't participate in it. But
I'd like to say then that spurs the growth of independent businesses and shops and, you know, art spaces and things like that. What it really probably means is that even more so than now, everything gets plowed over and condominiums get built.
Well, maybe.
Because people still need to live somewhere.
Yeah, maybe. It's hard to say what'll happen. I mean,
yeah.
I don't, you know, that's...
I'm no economist, and despite that, I still have no idea.
Well, and here's the thing.
That was funny.
A lot of economists don't know either. I mean...
Oh my God. Okay, it was funny until you just undermined my whole joke.
It's just...
I said, I'm not an economist, and despite that, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yes.
Very clearly implicating the economist as not knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You're like that dude at Wendy's.
No, I just, you cut off, so I didn't even hear your whole thing.
I went to Wendy's, drive through, ordering my wife a spicy chicken sandwich with no mayo, because she doesn't like mayo. And he put it on the thing, and I could see it, and it was great. And he's reading back the order to me, and he says, spicy chicken sandwich, extra mayo. And I said, no mayo. And he said, I'm just messing with you, sir. I should have seen it, too, because I do that to Trish all the time. I'm like, all right, I will be back soon with your spicy chicken sandwich with tons of mayo. I do that joke all the time. I should have caught it.
Right, but he shouldn't have done that.
No, it was hilarious. I love this guy. He's pretty new, and he jokes and he talks, and I love him. Mm. Also looks like College Humor producer Shane Crown for some reason. But
okay.
And you're all like, but economists actually don't know. I'm like, oh, you killed my joke. This is why we've never had a good vaudeville team.
What? We've never tried a vaudeville
thing. I'm constantly trying at all times, and you're undermining me.
Yeah.
You just accepted that some dude with a name Who would play first base. You were just fine with that. Ruined everything.
Yeah. Are we out of time? What does
your shirt say?
It's just an Iowa shirt.
Oh, University of Iowa. I saw it looked like it said varsity of something. But no, it's university.
Yeah, university. Yep. Just an Iowa shirt.
All right. I think that's all we got.
Just one question, huh?
Try again next week. Well, yeah, we're out of time.
Yeah.
Fine. Remind me next week to talk to you about Xenogenesis, the Octavia Butler trilogy, because I finished it. And I do want to talk about it because, again, I think it's one you might particularly find fascinating.
Oh, okay.
I think it is one that would take you an incredibly long time to read because I think every single sentence you would go over again like three times.
Probably.
But yeah. I think you would enjoy the process.
Okay.
We should talk about that. All right. For the rest of you, practice was good. Make sure to take a shower. Show up on time next week. Listen again. In the meantime, everybody at home, practice. Write themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. Do it every day. It has to be one. I want a form from your parents that says you did it every day. All right? I've totally lost control of this metaphor. We're clearly on some sort of team in school, but I've lost what age we are. And like, it was a sports team. But then I feel like it drifted into, like, some sort of, like, art performance.
Yeah.
So, it's got away from me.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, maybe next week I'll stick the landing.
Maybe.
So you have to listen so you can find out.
Yep.
All right. And, I mean, William will probably be here, too.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, Visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.